Belle, you're really old.
Devon, you're filibustering.
Belle, people would think you're a creep if you get me pregnant.
Devon, perhaps, but I wouldn't be the creepiest royal, so they'd get over it quickly.
Belle, so how do you see this going down?
Belle,
if we do this, and I'm not saying we will.
Devon, we could start this month. I have some business to conduct in England, but I should be free going forward. Just call when it's time.
Belle, I'll need to see an STD test to know you're clean.
Devon, I'll fax it over.
Fax? The man still used a fax machine. He was so ancient, I was surprised he didn't send me the results via carrier pigeon.
Devon, I'll draft a contract in which we settle things such as custody, financials, and so forth. I'd require a certain amount of involvement to ensure the contract is satisfactory to both parties.
Belle, we're really doing this, aren't we?
Devon, why not?
Belle, well, let's see.
Belle,
because it's crazy?
Devon, not half as crazy as getting pregnant by a faceless stranger, and yet people do that all the time. Evolution, darling. At the end of the day, we're nothing but glorified monkeys trying to ensure our footprint in this world is not forgotten.
Belle, did you just call me a monkey? Strong romance game, Whitehall.
He didn't reply. Maybe Devon wasn't so old as much as I felt so young in comparison to him.
Belle, one more question.
Devon, yes.
Belle, what's your favorite animal?
I thought he would for sure say a dolphin or a lion.
Something corny and predictable.
Devon, pink handfish.
Oh, awesome. More weird shit.
Belle,
why?
Devon, they look like drunk football hooligans trying to pick a fight at a bar. And their hands are eerie. Their flaws demand compassion.
Belle, you're weird.
Devon, true, but you are interested, darling.
Chapter 5.
Belle. The next day, I stopped at Walgreens on my way to work and got an ovulation kit and chewable prenatal vitamins. Passing by a billboard sign of myself naked, I popped 4 into my mouth and read the instructions on the kit. I pushed the door open to the back office of Madame Mayhem. Madame Mayhem was a stone's throw from Chinatown Gate in downtown Boston. It was tucked between 2 brownstones, a travel agency, and a produce shop. The price was dirt cheap when I bought it with 2 other partners and turned it from a failing restaurant into a trendy bar. 2 years ago, the guy who owned the laundrette next to us went bankrupt, and I convinced him to sell us the lot at a reduced rate. I'd run back and forth to City Hall, trying to get approval to knock down the dividing walls between the 2 properties. By the end of the process, the new and improved Madame Mayhem had been invented. Big, bold, and risque. Just like me. And now I was the proud owner of one of the most infamous establishments in the city. The place wasn't just a trendy nightclub with an obscenely expensive cocktail menu, but also offered burlesque shows, complete with 50s-style recreations of New Orleans entertainment, women and men in fine lingerie, as well as an amateur night every Thursday in which exhibitionists in the making had a chance to flaunt their goods. On paper, I made a great profit. But since I'd bought out the other 2 partners and refurbished the place completely, my personal income was modest. Not too bad, but bad enough that having a baby would put a serious dent in my savings. Still, I was a hard worker, undeterred by hiccups. I worked in the back office during the day and helped my bartenders by night.
Belly Belle,
Ross greeted me as soon as I slipped into my gray shoebox of an office.
He slid a coffee cup along my desk and took a seat on the edge of it. My best friend from school had grown up to be my chief bartender and staff manager at Madame Mayhem. He also grew up to be a total hottie. Boston is not used to seeing you with your clothes on. How are you feeling? High on life and low on cash. What's shaking? I took a sip of my coffee, my purse still slung on my forearm. I needed to pee on one of the ovulation sticks before I got to work. Ross hitched a shoulder up. Just wanted to make sure you were okay after last week's shit show. There was a shit show last week? I was kind of busy drinking my own body weight and trying to forget the news Dr. Bjorn gave me, so my memory was blurry. Frank? He clarified. Who the hell is Frank? I blinked. Ross gave me a you've got to be kidding me glare. Right, that bag of bullshit. Frank was a former bartender. Last week, I'd caught him sexually harassing one of the burlesque girls in the back room. I fired him on the spot. Frank had agreed to walk away, but not before giving me a piece of his own mind about what a train wreck of a drunk bitch I was. Luckily for me, I was always ready for a fight, especially with a man. So when he screamed at me, I screamed louder, and when he tried to throw a lamp at me, well, I threw a chair at him, then deducted the cost to replace the broken chair from his last paycheck. There you go, you oxygen-wasting piece of crap. Now make sure you skip town, because this town sure is going to skip you after I fill in all my club owner friends about what you did. I didn't stop there. I also sent his employee picture to local newspapers and told them what he did. Too harsh? Too bad. Next time, he shouldn't get handsy with the staff. It's all forgotten now. I waved my hand in the air dismissively. I didn't have time to talk about Frank. I needed to check and see if my eggs were doing their goddamn job.
We'll need to fill his spot.
Ross was still perched on my desk. I resumed my stride toward the bathroom. Yeah, well, just make sure they're fully vetted. I got into the bathroom, crouched down, and peed on the ovulation stick. Rather than put it aside and wait for the results like an actual adult, I glowered at the stick, praying to see two strong pink lines rather than one dull one. When two lines indeed appeared on the stick, I snapped a picture of it with my phone and sent it to Devin with the caption, "It's a go." I went outside, sat at my desk, and tried concentrating on the Excel sheets in front of me. My eyes kept darting sideways to my phone, waiting for Devin to reply. When he didn't send anything back for an entire hour, I flipped the phone over so the screen wasn't visible. "Time to calm your tits," I scolded myself internally. The man had a career. Every hour of his working day was billable. Of course, he couldn't just drop everything and run to Madame Mayhem to put a baby in me. About 2 hours after I sent the text message, Ross strode into my office again. He slammed an expensive-looking bottle of champagne on my desk. It had a little golden card dangling from its neck. "Dom Perignon?" I raised a skeptic eyebrow. "This specific edition went for about $1,000 a pop. We don't carry it here. Where'd you get it?"
"Ah, that's the question of the hour. Open the damn envelope and we'll find out."
Ross jerked his chin toward the card, which, upon a second examination, looked like a miniature envelope. Dread filled my guts. This looked a lot like romance. And I didn't do romance. I liked it better when Devin was comparing us to monkeys. "How do you know it's for me?" I eyed him suspiciously.
"Bitch, please. The only drink my dates buy for me is a fountain soda. Go on, who's it from?"
My fingers worked quickly to unwrap the mysterious envelope. Two tickets spilled out of its mouth. I picked one up, noticing my fingers were trembling.
"Tickets to the opera?"
Ross's voice asked in wonder.
"What kind of lies are you feeding these poor men on Tinder? This dude obviously doesn't know you."
"This is taunting my ass. He knows damn well I don't do dates."
I said I loved Oprah, not opera. He obviously misheard. I let a provocative yawn loose. There was no way I was telling Ross about Devin. It was soul-crushing enough to admit my infertility to my girlfriends. I was a woman of great pride. How come men never take me anywhere nice? Ross pouted. You give away the goods too quickly, I murmured, still staring at the ticket in my hand like it was a dead body I needed to get rid of. You do too. And you don't even one date them. You can have my ticket if you want it. I was not going to watch an opera today. I had work to do. We were one bartender short. I reminded myself that Devin did this for the same reason he did everything else, to manipulate, play, and throw people off kilter. He probably thought it was hilarious to make me feel like we were dating. I had to set the record straight. Belle, hello, you snail-eating, Gillette-wearing, regatta-attending, posh bloke, you. I won't be able to join you at the opera today, but you may stop at my apartment anytime after midnight, and I promise to hit those high notes. B. That message, too, remained unanswered. I worked into the evening, manning the bar along with six more bartenders clad in a ruffled lace overbust corset dress. The scent of my own sweat had become so familiar to me over the years I'd built my career, I relished it. I served drinks, cut limes, and hurried to the storage room to fetch more cocktail umbrellas. I danced on the bar, flirted with men and women, and rang the bell several times, signaling a tip-a-thon. The burgundy curtain had ascended over the front stage, revealing a live band in tuxes. Their jazzy tunes soaked into the tall walls. The burlesque dancers prowled slowly across the stage in high heels and sage-colored sequined dresses. People hooted, clapped, and whistled. I stopped, a crate of cocktail umbrellas in my arms, sweat dripping from my forehead, and watched them with a grin. My decision to buy Madame Mayhem wasn't accidental or offhanded. It stemmed from my wanting to promote the idea that being a sexual creature wasn't sinful. Sex didn't mean dirt. It could be casual and still be beautiful. My dancers weren't strippers. You couldn't touch them. You couldn't even breathe in their direction without getting kicked out of the venue, but they took control of their sexuality and did whatever they goddamn pleased. This, in my opinion, was true strength. When I got back behind the bar, it was almost 11. I knew I needed to wrap things up soon if I wanted to make it back home before midnight with sufficient time to take a shower, shave my legs, and look the part of Devin Whitehall's sexual partner. Ross! I roared over the music, gliding across the sticky floor behind the bar and aiming a soda gun into glasses, making a vodka Diet Coke for a gentleman in a suit. I'm off in 10. Ross's thumb rose up in the air to signal he'd heard me. His other hand plucked a $50 bill from a woman leaning against the bar, her breasts spilling out of a neon yellow sports bra. I was about to take an order from a bunch of women wearing bachelorette party sashes, maid of dishonor, bad influence, and designated drunk, when I propped forward to do so, a hand shot toward me from the dark, gripping my forearm and giving it a painful squeeze. I spun my head in the hand's direction and was about to yank my arm away when I noticed the person attached to said hand was staring at me with death in his eyes. His face was so scarred that I couldn't guess his age, even if I'd wanted to. A large portion of it was tattooed. He was swathed head to toe in black and looked nothing like the usual clientele we had here. He gave me Lucifer vibes, and he wasn't letting go of me. I suggest you remove your hand from my arm right now unless you're not feeling particularly attached to it, I hissed out through gritted teeth, my blood boiling over. The man smiled an awful, rotten smile. It wasn't that his teeth were bad. On the contrary, they were big, white, and shiny, like he'd recently had dental work. It was what was behind him that made me uneasy.
I have a message to deliver to you.
If it's from Satan, tell him to come to me personally if he's got the balls, I spat out, yanking my arm away with force. His hand dropped, and I used every ounce of my self-control not to stick the lemon knife in it.
I suggest you listen carefully, Amabel, unless you want very bad things to happen to you.
Says who? I chuckled.
If you don't.
Just as he began to speak, a tall, elegant form materialized from the shadows of the club, tossing the man away like he weighed no more than a straw. My scarred offender collapsed on the floor. Devon appeared in my line of vision, clad in a full-blown designer tux, his hair gelled back, his cheekbones as sharp as blades. He stepped onto the man, deliberately, scowling down at his loafers like he needed to clean dirt off of them. I was in the middle of something, I flashed him my teeth.
Allow me not to sympathize.
Are you capable of sympathy?
Generally, yes. With women who leave me waiting, not so much.
Devon leaned over the bar in one swift movement and hurled me across his shoulder, turning away and marching toward the entrance doors. I looked up, catching Ross's deer-in-the-headlights expression, frozen with a bottle of beer in one hand and a bottle opener in the other.
Should I call security? The police? Sam Brennan?
Ross crowed from the depths of the bar over the music. Devon didn't slow down.
No, it's okay. I'll kill him myself. But get this creeper's details.
I was about to point at Scarface, where I last saw him on the floor, only to find him gone. I didn't fight, Devon. Being carried after working on one's feet for 6 hours straight wasn't the worst punishment in the world. Instead, I launched a verbal attack on him.
Why are you dressed up like a fancy waiter?
It's called a suit. It's an appropriate form of dress, though I gather the men you enjoy often sport orange jumpsuits.
Who told you? Percy? I shrieked. I only slept with one ex-con, and it was for a Ponzi scheme. It's pretty much like screwing a politician.
I waited for you,
he said flatly, his voice turning icy. Why? I huffed, resisting the urge to pinch his butt. I already told you I'm not going to the opera.
No, you did not, he said dryly, his fingers curling deeper into the curve of my ass. My champagne and tickets arrived safe and sound, and since I hadn't heard back from you, I assumed the plan was to meet tonight.
That was impossible. I sent him a message. Oh. Oh, the message must have not gone through. My cellular company had very poor reception, especially when I was in the underground bunker called my office. I sent you a message. It didn't go through. You think this whole alpha male charade turns me on or something? I let out a snort, because let me tell you, it absolutely did. Not that I would ever admit it out loud, but holy hell, it had been a hot minute since I'd been handled with such brash confidence.
Not all of us engage in theatrics to survive, my dear Amabel. What you think of me is absolutely none of my business.
Devon burst out of my club into the cool, crisp night, striding toward his car.
You say you want a child, but you also go prancing around, drinking and working yourself to the bone. One of us knows how to get you pregnant, and I'm afraid that person is not you.
The nerve of this asshole. He was mansplaining sex to me. I could stab him if I wasn't, indeed, a little drunk and a lot exhausted from the day's work. Devon threw open the passenger door to his dark green Bentley, tucking me inside and buckling me up.
Now, tell me who that man was, the one who held your arm.
He shut the door and rounded the car before I could answer, then slipped beside me. A waft of his irresistible, rich scent drifted into me.
I have no idea. I was about to find out when you thundered in, giving me your best straight-out-of-savior complex impression.
Is it an ordinary occurrence, men grabbing you at work?
He started the car, zipping through the ice-crusted streets toward my apartment. My heart had no business skipping a beat because he remembered my address. What was happening in my chest? Better be a goddamn heart murmur. What do you think? I sassed.
I think certain men feel they can touch you because of your line of work,
he answered honestly. It happened often, actually. Especially when I danced on the bar or got on stage with my dancers. But I knew how to set boundaries and put people in their place. It's true, I grinned.
I constantly need to fight men off. How do you think I developed these babies? I kissed my biceps. When he said nothing, I opened his glove compartment and began sifting through his shit. I often did things like that, goaded people into a reaction. You could learn a lot about humans by the way they carried themselves when angry. I found a small engraved fossil and pulled it out.
I'm not impressed with what I've seen tonight.
Devon, as calm as the Dalai Lama, jerked the fossil from my hands and dumped it between us.
My goodness, you're not?
I slapped a hand over my cleavage, exhibiting my best fake British accent.
Heavens above, I must quit right this minute and become a governess or a nun.
Whatever suits your taste, my lord.
You're infuriating.
He scrubbed at his perfect cheekbone, exasperated. And you were in my way, I concluded, taking the small fossil again and messing with it. I can fight my own battles, Devon.
You're barely capable of keeping yourself alive.
His glacial expression told me he wasn't being funny. He truly thought that. At my building, Devon took the flight of stairs to my apartment rather than use the elevator, still carrying me in his arms. More weirdness. How come none of his super fans in this city ever picked on how odd he was? There's an elevator right here. Put me down, caveman.
I don't do those.
His voice was clipped. You don't do elevators? I asked, relishing the feeling of his abs and pecs against my body.
Correct. Or any sort of confined space I can't get out of with ease.
What about cars? Planes? There went my mile-high dream with a royal. It was good while it lasted. Also very specific.
Logic dictates I use both, but I try to stay away from them whenever possible.
Why? I was baffled. It seemed like such an irrational fear for a man who was pure rationalism. His chest quaked with a chuckle. He looked down at me, amused.
That's none of your business, darling.
When we arrived at my apartment, I was surprised to find Devon was in no hurry to peel my clothes off and have wild, unbridled sex with me. Instead, he produced a batch of documents from a stylish leather briefcase and set it on the coffee table, taking a seat. I sprawled on a colorful recliner, glaring at him. What are you doing? I asked, even though it was pretty obvious he was removing enough paper documents to papier-mâché the Statue of Liberty, setting them on the table. Devon didn't bother to lift his eyes from the files.
Attending to our legally binding contract. In the meantime, feel free to catch up on the opera you've missed tonight. La Boheme.
He offered me his phone, on which a recording was already playing. How'd you get in? You sent me two tickets.
I wanted to make sure you had a spare in case one got lost, so I purchased the entire row.
Motherfucker. That was swoony as all hell, but in a jerk sort of way, because he still worked under the assumption I was not going to have my shit together. I snatched the phone from his hands.
How do you know I won't go through your messages? How do you know it's not my personal phone rather than the one I use for work?
He clapped back. I shot him a whatever look, because apparently the current age gap between us wasn't enough. I just had to act like a teenager.
Watch it.
He jerked his chin to the phone, unbothered by my evil looks. You recorded the whole thing? Not very many people had the ability or talent to shock me, but this did. I was usually the one raising a scandal. Devon picked up a red Sharpie, reading through the material in front of him, still not sparing me any attention.
Correct.
But why? I screwed you over.
And I'm about to screw you senseless.
Your point? His impalpable face did not waver.
Now, please watch the opera while I read through the contract one more time.
For the next 40 minutes, I did just that. Watched the opera as he worked. The first 10 minutes, I stole glances at him. It was nice, knowing I was about to be under this potent, sophisticated male. But 10 minutes into the opera, something weird happened. I started, well, kind of getting into it. La Boheme was a story about a poor seamstress and her artist friends. The whole thing was in Italian, and even though I didn't know one word of the language, I felt everything the heroine was feeling. There was power in it, the way the music tugged at my emotions, like I was a marionette on a string. At some point, Devin slid his phone from my hand and tucked it back into his pocket. He was sitting closer to me now. "Hey," I sent him a dirty glare. "I was in the middle of something. Mimi and Rodolfo decided to stay together until springtime."
"The ending is exquisite,"
he assured me, sliding an expensive-looking pen out of his briefcase.
"You'd have loved it had you joined me at the opera."
"I want to see the ending."
"Play your cards right, and you will. Let's go over the contract together."
"And then?" I raised an eyebrow, folding my arms across my chest.
"And then, my dear Emmabel,"
he smiled devilishly,
"I'm going to fuck your brains out."
1 hour and 23 minutes. That was how long it took Devin and I to go over all of the provisions in the contract he'd drafted for us. He then proceeded to show me his STD test. The man was as clean as a whistle, and proceeded to let me know that he agreed to waive my own test on the grounds of trying to create a respectable and trustful working environment. I liked that he referred to the arrangement as work. It felt clinical, detached. Problem was, by the time we were done going over legal documents, it was the middle of the night, and I was curled on the couch next to him, yawning into a throw pillow. I was still in the same corseted dress I wore for work, and looked like a medieval prostitute who was about to corrupt the king's first son.
"Is this your secret weapon? Exhausting people into submission?"
I purred into the pillow, fighting the unbearable weight of my eyelids. I heard Devin putting the signed contracts back into his leather briefcase and zipping it shut.
"Among others?"
His jaw ticked, and I thought I saw something cold and emotionless pass across his face. I let my eyes rest for a few seconds.
"Hmm,"
I replied, hugging the pillow I was resting against, curling around it like a cat.
"I believe you've just met your match. I never bow to anyone."
"Have you ever had a boyfriend?"
he asked.
"Nope. That's what I thought."
"And you?" I was already half asleep when I asked it.
"No, to a boyfriend. I've had a few girlfriends. None of them survived the 6-month mark, though."
"That's what I thought,"
I slurred, letting out a soft snore. At this point, I was snoring into my own armpit, in an exhibition of bursting allure and delicate femininity.
"Sweden."
His low voice rolled like a dark cloud above my head.
"Up you go."
"You going to Sweden?"
I was drooling over my throw now, the cold, sticky saliva gluing my cheek against it. He chuckled.
"Not Sweden. Sweven."
"Oh."
A pause. I was still asleep, but still somehow talking to him.
"What's that?"
"A dream. A vision. Something that comes to you in your sleep. You're a fantasy, Emmabel. Too good to be true. Too bad to be experienced."
"Whoopee me," I groaned.
I hoped he wasn't going to ask me to marry him. I was exhausted and sleep-deprived enough to consider it.
"Time to take a shower."
"Tomorrow," I garbled.
"It is tomorrow," he argued. "And Google told me your ovulation window is only 12 to 24 hours. Get into the shower so we can fulfill our contract."
Swiftly, and without making a sound, Devin picked me up honeymoon style and carried me along my apartment.
"Finally," I thought, my eyes still closed. The bastard was taking me to my bed. We'd do it tomorrow, or the next day, or...
What the hell? My eyes snapped open when I was met with icy needles of frozen water. Disoriented, I found myself lying on the floor of my shower. Both shower heads were spitting at me. I looked around frantically, spotting Devin standing on the other side of the glass door, his narrow hip leaning against the wall, his shirt sleeves rolled up to his elbows, exposing mouth-watering, veiny forearms. The devil's smirk was smeared across his face. I scrambled out of my already ruined dress,
which became heavy with liquid, dumping it with a slap on the floor beside me. "I'm going to kill you," I clawed at the door like a wet feline, fully awake and naked now. I was about to pry it open and pounce on him. He moved over to the other side of the glass door, pulling the handle and keeping it shut.
"Kill me later. First, I need you clean and alert."
"The only touching we'll be doing when I get out of here is me stabbing you in the face." I bared my teeth through the glass. I didn't remember him half as exasperating when we had casual sex. Did he have a shitty personality transplant or something?
"Angry sex is the best sex."
Devin brushed his thumb over his lower lip, throwing me over the edge of my sanity. "I'll freeze to death," I was trying to bargain now.
"I'll write you a lovely obituary."
"You can't be that heartless," I banged on the glass door with my fist.
"Of course I can."
He smiled cordially, like a host in a Michelin star restaurant.
"Besides, diamonds are made under pressure."
"Let go of the handle."
"Wash first."
"Or what?" I felt crazy with the need to retaliate for what he was doing to me. My mind began working overtime. I wasn't going to let him get away with that. No way.
"Or this will be the only way you'll get wet tonight. And threats aside, we both know you've been dreaming about this since the night you threw me out all those years ago."
His words made me glance down to his slacks, to the impressive tent that awaited my attention. My eyes snapped back up to him. "Sorry, pal. My time with you didn't chart in the first 20 memorable fucks I've had." Devin grinned, little crinkles of happiness decorating his jewel-colored eyes.
"Liar."
He turned around and strolled out of the bathroom, all confidence and suaveness. I seized the opportunity and launched out of the shower, jumping in front of him and blocking his way. I pushed him back toward the bathroom, my body soaking his tux with water. "Not so fast, Duke of Cuntington. I believe it's your turn." Before I could finish the sentence, he pushed me against the wall and covered my mouth in a punishing, bruising kiss. His hands roamed my back, running down to my ass and cupping it with strong fingers. He pushed me against his erection through his pants. The air around us buzzed with rage and frustration and darkness. We were both starved. He tore his mouth from mine, rolling his thumb over my lips, erotically prying them open.
"Now, now, Swiven. Don't be so upset. I knew I needed to wake you up to be inside you. And touching you before I boarded a plane to England was of paramount importance."
"When are you leaving?" I darted my tongue out to swirl it over his thumb. His lips parted, a half-drunk look forming on his Adonis face. My fingers unbuttoned his slacks. My body lit up like a live wire.
"Tomorrow."
"Why?"
"Business."
His mouth dipped between us, to my breasts, and he took one of my nipples between his teeth, gazing up and smiling at me before it disappeared inside his mouth when he sucked. "But what if we miss my ovulation window?" I let my head roll backward, a low moan escaping me. I threaded my fingers through his hair, the intense pleasure of being in his arms coming back to me in full force. Devin's lips quirked.
"Then I'm afraid we'll have to go through another month of fucking one another. Remember, you have 5 months before I discard your lovely ass."
His cock sprang free from his slacks as his knuckles brushed my slit. I knew he wasn't going to finger me. It wasn't Devin's style. There was something outrageously proper about the way he fucked. He screwed you in a way that felt both clean and dirty. It was why I was so obsessed with him. In bed, in the first place. My body trembled with anticipation the way it had all those years ago when he cornered me in Killian Fitzpatrick's cabin and dared me to let him make me come 5 times in one night. He delivered on that promise. In spades. Devin fisted his thick, engorged cock, rolling it along my slit, slapping my clit with it. We both watched intently, our hot breaths mixing together. He pushed his tip inside me to find that I was completely soaked. His eyes traveled up. We both grinned at each other. I nodded once, giving him permission. He slid his entire cock inside me, grabbed the back of my thighs and began fucking me against the wall. The cold surface behind me dug between my shoulder blades. And yet, I didn't care. Didn't care Devin was still fully clothed. Didn't care it was the middle of the night and I was moaning loud enough to wake up people in Wisconsin. Did not care about anything other than the moment we were sharing. The intense pleasure of having him inside me again was gratifying, but it was the possibility of creating another life that made me feel frenzied. We came together, wave after wave of pleasure crashing through me. It was different from the times before. The orgasm was great, but when he started to come and I felt the hot, sticky liquid spilling inside me, we both held each other's gazes, quivering in each other's arms, smiling. The fact that he was so present exhilarated me. He lowered me down to the floor carefully, taking a step back. I read somewhere in one of my internet hunts that it was a good idea to lie on the bed with my legs up to increase my chances of conceiving. Suddenly, I was slammed with a hurry to do just that. Well, I swayed on my hips as I plucked a robe from a hanger, wrapping it around me, feeling less dignified than I looked as traces of his cum slithered down my inner thigh.
Thank you for your services. Now, if you could kindly get the fuck out of my apartment, I would appreciate it greatly.
Again, I used the same fake British accent I hoped was going to make him dislike me. His pants, or trousers, if to go by what he called them, were down to his knees. He retucked his shirt into them, taking his time to make himself presentable.
I'll be off to England for the remainder of the week, as I mentioned, he began, but now it was my turn to catch him off guard.
Dude, I'm not going to need you until next month, if at all. Share your schedule with someone who cares. I shoved him toward my front door. Normally, moving a tall, built man of his size wasn't that easy, but since his pants were still half done, he lost his footing and stumbled backward a little.
You're as refined as an alley cat, he said with great satisfaction.
I'm not the one who threw a half-asleep person into a cold shower. I gave him another shove. He made a show of pretending to bite my hand as I pushed him.
I regret nothing, Swevin. It was a pleasure to fuck you.
And a one-off, I reminded him, opening the door behind him and giving him a final thrust. Also, don't try to make Swevin happen. We're not those people. Outside, in the communal hallway, half-dressed and laughing gruffly, still hopping from side to side as he pulled his pants on, he gave me the most devastating smirk I'd ever seen. I had to remind myself that he was a flirt and a rake, a man who, despite his beautiful face, had an ugly rap sheet with the ladies.
You don't know what kind of person I am, but you're about to find out.
Chapter 6. Devon. The bad news was that I'd accidentally made it to my father's funeral. The good news was that I was so happy to spot Mom and Cece, not even the fact I was there honoring my father managed to put a damper on my mood. The original plan was to arrive a day after the funeral. They must have conducted the funeral a day early, seeing as they did not need to accommodate my schedule any longer. I showed up during the last act, when the casket was lowered into the ground. My father was buried in the back of Whitehall Court Castle, by a deserted church, where his ancestors had been buried, where, presumably, I would one day rest for eternity too. My childhood home was a grand fortress, with medieval-style turrets, Gothic Revival architecture, granite and marble, and an unholy amount of arched windows. The castle was surrounded by a horseshoe-shaped garden at the front and an out-of-service old church around the back. There were two barns, four servant cottages, and a manicured walkway leading to a wild forest. On a clear day, you could see the French coast from Whitehall Court Castle's rooftop. Memories of my younger self, lean and bronzed, daring the sun to burn me alive and melt me into the stone I'd lain upon, chased one another in my head. I strode toward the thick cluster of people in black, mentally ticking off the attendance list in my head. Mum was there, dainty and dignified as ever, patting her nose with a wad of tissues. My sister, Cecilia, was there with her husband, Drew Hastings, whom I'd met multiple times when they visited me in the States. Though I skipped their wedding in Kent, I made sure to gift the couple a lovely studio apartment in Manhattan so they could visit me regularly. Cecilia and Drew were both plump and tall. I suppose to the naked eye, they looked like twins. They stood shoulder to shoulder but did not acknowledge one another. Though I had tried very hard to like Hastings for the sake of my sister, I couldn't ignore how staggeringly unimpressive his entire being was. While he did come from good pedigree and a highly connected family, he had been known around gentlemen clubs in England as a rather dull, dim-witted man who couldn't hold on to a job if one chained itself to his leg. Byron and Benedict were standing on the far end of the throng. They were in their late 50s, both looking bloated and wrinkled. It was as though they had spent every waking moment since I'd left drinking and smoking themselves into their current state. And then there was Louisa Butchart. At 39, Louisa had managed to become agreeable to the eye. She had hair as dark as my soul, short and shiny scarlet lips, and a fine and graceful bone structure. Her trim figure was clad in a double-breasted black coat, a woman any respectable man of my position and title would want on his arm. I had to admit, if it wasn't for the fact I needed to reject her on principle, Louisa was sure to make a man like me very happy one day. I tucked a roly into the side of my mouth and lit it up as I made my way to the gaping hole in the lush green grass. I stopped when my chest bumped into Cecilia's back. I leaned forward, my lips finding her ear. "Hello, sis." Cecilia turned to me, her blue eyes swimming with shock. I kept my gaze on the coffin as little by little, piles of dirt concealed it from view. For a moment, I was acutely aware of the fact that everyone's attention had drifted from the casket and focused on me. I couldn't blame them. They probably thought I was a hologram. "Devi!" Cecilia threw her arms over my shoulders, burying her face in my neck. "How we've missed you. Mummy said you wouldn't be here until tomorrow." I wrapped my arms around her, kissing the top of her head. "Lovely girl, I will always be here for you. Even if I have to honor the wanker who gave me life." "My goodness, I almost had a heart attack," Mother cried out. She hobbled toward me, her heels sinking into the muddy ground. The air smelled like English rain, like home. I collected her in my arms and squeezed, kissing her cheek. "Mummy?" Mourners began huddling toward us, curious glances on their faces. It made me pettily content, knowing I'd yet again stolen the limelight from Edwin, even on his last journey. Mum reared her head back, placing her frozen palms on my cheeks, tears making her eyes glitter. "You're so handsome, so tall. I keep forgetting your face if I don't see you over a few months." Despite myself, something between a grumble and a laugh escaped me. I'd been so adamant not to return to England as long as my father was alive, I almost forgot how much I had missed Mother and Cecilia. "You managed to make it, aye? Good on you, mate." Drew clapped my back. Still hugging my mother, I felt a hesitant hand on my arm. When I swiveled my head, I caught Cecilia smiling shyly, her skin pink, fragile as light bulb glass.
"I've missed you, brother," she said quietly.
"Cece," I growled, almost in pain. I stepped out of the embrace with my mother and gathered my sister into my arms. Her yellow curls tickled my nose. I was surprised to discover she still smelled of green apples, winter, and the woods. Of a childhood with too many rules and too little laughs. Regret ripped me open. I'd all but deserted my younger sister, left her to fend for herself when she was a teenager. Mum was right. Coming back to England did resurface old memories and unsolved issues.
"Will you be staying for a while?" Cece pleaded.
"I'm staying for a few days," I stroked her hair, glancing over the top of her head and making eye contact with Drew, who shifted from foot to foot, looking anything but happy to have another male in the house. At least, I added meaningfully. She quivered in my arms, and suddenly I became furious with myself for not being more involved in her life. Growing up, she'd always needed me, and I was always there. Yet somehow my hatred toward my father made me miss her wedding 3 years ago. Are you happy with him? I mouthed into her hair so only she could hear me. She started. Well, well, Benedict said, with Byron on his heels. He squeezed my shoulder. I thought I'd see pigs fly before I caught sight of Devon Whitehall back on British soil. I disconnected from Cecilia, shaking his and his brother's hands. My apologies, but the only pigs I know are right here on Earth, and looking like they could use a trip to rehab. Benedict's smile collapsed. Very funny, he grit his teeth. I have thyroid issues, for your information. And you, Byron? I turned to his brother. What issues are preventing you from looking like a sober, functioning member of society? Not all of us are so vain as to mind their appearance as much. I hear you're a self-made millionaire now. Byron smoothed his suit with his hand. I finished off my fag and flicked the bud toward the grave. I get by. Being known for your accomplishments is such hard work. Better to be known by your last name and inheritance, Benedict cackled. Either way, it's good to have you back. Thing was, I wasn't back. I was just a visitor, a bystander in a life that was no longer mine. I'd built a life elsewhere. I was tied to the Fitzpatrick family, who took me under their wing, with my law firm and my fencing and the women I wooed. With a new twist in my story, Emmabel Penrose, a girl who had more demons than gowns in her closet. As people engulfed me from all directions, demanding to hear about my life in America, my mates, my partners, my clients, my conquests, I noticed only one person stayed away, on the other side of the dirt-filled, shallow grave. Louisa Bouchard studied me from a safe distance under her lashes. Her mouth was curled in a slight pucker, her back arched, as if flaunting her new assets. Come now, Mother laced my arm in hers, tugging me toward the sprawling manor. You'll have plenty of time to talk to Lou. I cannot wait to show you off to all the servants. But there was nothing to discuss. I owed Louisa Bouchard an apology. And nothing more. An hour later, I sat at a grand table in one of the two dining rooms of Whitehall Court Castle. I was at the head of the table. My family and childhood friends surrounded me. It astonished me how nothing had changed in the 20 years I was gone. Down to the plaid carpeting, carved wooden furniture, candelabras, and floral wallpaper. The walls were sodden with memories. Eat your greens or end up in the dumbwaiter. But Papa, no son of mine will grow up to be pudgy and soft like Bouchard's kids. Eat all your greens now, or you're spending the night in the box. I'll throw up if I do. Just as well. Vomiting would do your portly figure good. As I looked around me, couldn't help but feel sorry for Cece and Mother, even more than I was for myself. At least I went and built myself another life. They stayed here, burdened by my father's god-awful temper and never-ending demands. So, Devon, do tell us all about your life in Boston. Is it as dreadful and grey as they say? Byron demanded, chewing loudly on shepherd's pie and meatloaf. I've heard it isn't much different from Birmingham. I suppose the person who told you that has never been to either, I said, swallowing a chunk of shepherd's pie without tasting it. I rather enjoy the four seasons of the city as well as the cultural establishments. The cultural establishments being Sam's Gentleman Club, in which I gambled, fenced, and smoked myself to death. And what of the women? Benedict probed, well into his fifth glass of wine. How do they chart in comparison to England? My eyes met Louisa's from across the table. She didn't shy away from my gaze, but didn't offer any type of emotion either. Women are women. They are fun, necessary, and an overall bad financial investment, I drawled. I was hoping to convey I was still the same no-good tomcat who'd run away from England to avoid marriage. Benedict laughed. Well, if no one's going to address the elephant in the room, I might as well do so myself. Devon, don't you have anything to say to our dear sister after leaving her high and dry? 4 years she waited for you.
Benedict, enough!
Louisa snapped, tilting her chin up demurely.
Where are your manners?
Where are his? He crooned. Someone has to call him out on this, since Mum and Dad can't. Where's the Duke of Salisbury and his wife? I asked, realizing for the first time they hadn't attended the funeral. There was a beat of silence before my mother cleared her throat.
They passed away, I'm afraid. A car accident.
Christ, why hadn't she told me? My condolences, I said, looking at Louisa rather than her brothers, whom I still hadn't considered to be on the same evolutionary scale as me. These things happen. Byron waved a dismissive hand. Clearly, he was too enamored with being a duke these days to care about the price of his new title. There was another short-lived silence before Benedict spoke again. She'd told all of her friends you were coming back to her, you know, Louisa. Poor bird went to see venues for engagement parties all across London. Louisa gnawed on her inner cheek, swirling her glass of wine and looking into it without drinking. I wanted to drag her somewhere secluded and private, to apologize for the mess I'd created in her life, to assure her I fucked myself over just as much as I fucked her over. God, do you remember? Byron cackled, slapping his brother's back. She even chose an engagement ring and everything, got our father to pay for it because she didn't want you to think she was too demanding. You properly mugged her off, mate. That was not my intention, I said through gritted teeth, finding no appetite for my dish nor the company. We were both children.
I do believe this is something Devon and Louisa shall address privately.
My mother tapped the corners of her mouth with a napkin, although there was no trace of food on her face.
It is inappropriate to broach this matter in company, not to mention at my husband's funeral dinner.
Besides, there's so much more to talk about, Drew, Cece's husband, exclaimed with faux excitement, grinning at me. Devon, I'd been meaning to ask, what are your thoughts about Britain's mortgage boom? The inflation risk is quite high, don't you reckon? I opened my mouth to answer when Byron cut into the conversation, raising his wine glass in the air like a tyrannical emperor. Please, no one cares about the housing market. You're talking to people who don't even know how to spell the word mortgage, let alone ever had to pay one. He slammed the wine glass on the table, its carmine red contents spilling over on the white tablecloth. Instead, why don't we talk about all the promises Devon Whitehall hasn't kept throughout the years? To our sister, to his family, how reality has finally caught up with Lord Handsome, and he now needs to make some serious concessions if he wants to keep whatever's left of his previous life. Louisa stood up and slapped a napkin over her still full plate.
If you will excuse me.
Her voice trembled, but her composure remained perfect.
The meal was fantastic, Mrs. Whitehall, but I am afraid my brother's company was not. I'm terribly sorry for your loss.
She turned around and stalked off. My mother and I exchanged looks. I knew I needed to rectify the situation, even though I wasn't the one to create it. But first, I had to deal with the two clowns occupying my dinner table. I speared Benedict and Byron with a glare. While I'm sympathetic to your recent loss of your parents, this is the last time you speak to me this way. Like it or not, I'm the lord of the manor. I choose whom to entertain, and more importantly, whom not to entertain. You've crossed the line and made your sister and my mother upset. Next time you do this, you'll be met with a bullet to the arse. I may be a rake of few scruples, but as we all know, I am a damn good shot, and your arses are an easy target. Byron and Benedict's smug smiles evaporated into thin air, replaced with scowls. I stood up and stormed in the direction in which Louisa went. Behind my back, I heard the Bouchard brothers droning a half-hearted apology about their behavior, blaming the wine for their poor manners. I found Louisa in my old conservatory room, surrounded by exotic plants, big windows, and mint-colored wood. Her fingertips moved over an assortment of colorful roses in an expensive vase, a gift from a French viscount which dated all the way to the 19th century. Rather than touch the velvety petals, Louisa played with the thorns. I stood on the threshold in awe. She reminded me of Emmabel, a woman who was more charmed by the pain of a beautiful thing than the pleasure it offered. Louisa prickled the tip of her index finger. She withdrew from the thorn unhurriedly, sucking the blood, showing no signs of distress. I closed the door behind me. Louisa? She didn't look up, her neck turned downward like a graceful swan.
Devon?
I believe an apology is in order. I rolled a finger along a wood panel, finding it to be layered with a thick blanket of dust. Jesus Christ, Whitehall Court Castle was usually flawless. Did my mother and Cece have money issues?
To me or to your family?
Louisa returned to caressing the thorns, and I found myself unable to look away from her. She seemed so calm, so accepting, even after all these years. I strode deeper into the room, the overwhelming humidity and heavy sweetness of blossoms suffocating me. Both, I suppose.
Well, consider yourself forgiven by me. I'm not one to hold a grudge, though I'm not too sure the same could be said about Cece and Ursula.
We get along fine, I clipped out curtly.
That may be so, but they've been very lonely and sad since you left.
My throat clogged with self-loathing. What's the situation with my sister and mother? I asked, taking a seat in front of her on the armrest of a green upholstered couch. Whenever I see them, they look happy and content with their lives. Then again, I made a habit of housing them in the best apartments, taking them to the best restaurants and treating them to the most lavish shopping sprees whenever they came for a visit.
Mr. Hastings is positively skint. He hasn't a dime to his name and hasn't been pulling his weight in this household, which, now that your father's money is held up in the will, might pose an issue.
Louisa furrowed her delicate eyebrows, grazing a thorn with her stung finger.
Cece is quite miserable with him, but she feels she is too old and not pretty or accomplished enough to divorce him and look for someone else. Your mum and Edwin had a less than ideal marriage, and I suspect she's been very lonely, especially in the last decade.
I stood up, ambling over to the glass and propping an elbow against it. A flock of ducks waddled across the lawn. Does Mum have any support? How did I not know the answer to my own question?
She's stopped taking social calls in recent years. It seems pointless. With her youngest daughter married to a fool and her oldest son being the most infamous rake Britain has produced, she never has any good news to share, though I try to visit her whenever I'm in Kent.
Even as she said this, Louisa didn't sound particularly accusing or antagonistic. She was the exact opposite of Emmabel Penrose, soft and pliant. Cece never had any children, I mused.
No.
Louisa came to stand in front of me, her modest cleavage pressing against my chest. I noticed her fingers were full of broken flesh, bruised by thorns.
I doubt Hastings has a taste for more than gambling and hunting. Children are not high on his to-do list.
Her body pressed harder against mine. The game had changed between us, and Louisa was no longer the timid little girl who'd begged me to throw crumbs of attention her way. Run away again, her eyes said. If you dare. No part of me wanted to move. She was attractive, attentive, and interested. But I couldn't take my mind off Swevin. The woman who snuck into my dreams like a thief, flooding them with desire and need. And what about you, Lou? I curled my fingers around the back of her neck and drew her an inch away from me. her skin pricked with goosebumps under my touch. I heard you lost your fiancé. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well.
Louisa licked her lips, smoothing my suit with a dark chuckle.
I suppose you could say I've never had the best of luck when it comes to men.
What happened to us had nothing to do with luck. I was a selfish wanker who ran away from responsibility. You were always collateral, never the main objective.
I never held a grudge, you know,
she murmured, her voice calm, collected. It surprised me. I imagined heads would roll if I were in her position.
Anger just seems like such a wasteful feeling. Nothing good ever comes of it.
That's a lovely way of looking at things. I smiled gravely, thinking, if people let go of their anger, us solicitors would be left with no job.
You're back now.
Her dark eyes met mine, daring me again. I took her hand, which was on my chest, near my heart, and pressed her cold knuckles to my warm lips. Not for good. I shook my head, my gaze holding hers. Never for good.
Never say never, Devon.